And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Slam and Jam here on the Athletic NBA Show. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. With me, as always, is Alex Spears. Please go to theathletic.com/NBA show. Get The Athletic for a discounted rate. The quality of the articles that are written on The Athletic is just... There's nothing that you can compare to it. It's great. From the stuff that James Edwards is putting out there about the horrific Pistons to, I mean, Law Murray is always pumping out something good. Fred Katz, you can look at all of his stuff on the OG Anunoby trade. It's just great. And you can get it at a discounted rate when you go to theathletic.com/NBA show. It's wonderful. With me, as always, Alex Spears. Alex, tell me what happened in the NBA this week.
Well, Andrew, it all started last Friday night with two teams we haven't talked about in a while, the Brooklyn Nets and your Washington Wizards. The Wizards got their sixth win of the season, beating Brooklyn 110-104 behind 26 from Kyle Kuzma and 21-13-6 from Denny Avdia. The Wizards continue to be a team playing in the NBA. For the Nets, things aren't looking great. They are currently on a five-game losing streak and are 2-10 in their last 12. And if that doesn't sound bad enough to you for some reason, the two wins during that stretch were against the Detroit Pistons, a team that is currently giving the GM who took 4 years to construct the greatest loser in the sport's history a couple more chances just to make sure. Speaking of those Pistons, on Saturday night, all good things must come to an end. And on this night, it was the final episode of the best show on television.
True.
The Pistons ended their losing streak at 28 games with a 129-127 win over the Toronto Raptors. Cade Cunningham put up 30-12 in the two-point win, hitting all 10 of his free throws. Now, if you enjoyed watching the Pistons over the stretch and are sad your favorite show is over, the good news is the Pistons have been renewed for season two and are already on a losing streak again. The Raptors were without starter OG Anunoby in the game, along with Precious Achiuwa and Malachi Flynn, because we had our first trade of the season prior to the game. The Raptors sent OG, Precious, and Flynn to the New York Knicks in exchange for Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, and a Detroit Pistons second-round pick. On Sunday, the New Orleans Pelicans took it to the Los Angeles Lakers, leading by double digits for most of the game and finishing them off 129-109. After the disappointing appearance in Vegas against those same Lakers, things have been looking up for the Pels. They are 9-3 since the in-season tournament, with two big wins over the Timberwolves. It's been a great run, though it is worth mentioning that the other seven wins during that stretch were the Wizards, Hornets, Spurs, the injured Cavs, Jazz, Lakers, and Nets. Not exactly a murderer's row, but hey, yeah. The Pelicans are 21-14, and they have moved up to sixth in the West, only a game back of tonight's opponent, the Clippers, for fourth. For the Lakers, it's that time of year. The Lakers have lost three in a row in eight of their last 10, with much of the blame online going to head coach Darvin Ham. Could this be the end of Ham in Lakerland? Shams Charania tweeted later in the week that, quote, "There's currently a growing disconnect between Darvin Ham and the Lakers locker room stemming from disjointedness around rotation and adjustments." On Monday, it was the debuts for all the players included in Saturday's trade between the Raptors and the Knicks. The deal was seen by many as a win-win trade, and so far that take is looking pretty good. Because on Monday, the Knicks beat the Wolves and the Raps beat the Cavs. And later in the week, the Knicks beat the Bulls while the Raps beat the Grizz for a combined 4-0 record since the trade. Win-win. On Tuesday, it was the biggest test of the season for the young Oklahoma City Thunder, with a healthy Boston Celtics team coming to town. The Thunder were up by 18 with 7 minutes left in the game when Boston turned it on, getting it all the way down to a two-point game with a couple minutes left. In the end, however, clutch shots from Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams helped the Thunder escape with a 127-123 victory. The Thunder are now 23-10, and since we last spoke, have gotten Western Conference wins over the 1-seed Wolves, 3-seed Nuggets, and 4-seed Clippers. On Wednesday, those 4-seed Clippers were in Phoenix to play the Suns, who are once again without one of their big three. Through 34 games, the Booker, Beal, and KD trio have played a grand total of 65 minutes together. Tonight, it was KD who was out, and despite Booker putting up 35 points on 15 shots, it was the Clippers who won 131-122, their 11th straight win when Kawhi Leonard plays. Despite the ongoing injury woes, things aren't awful for the Suns. Before the Clippers game, they had been on a 4-game winning streak, and they now sit at 18-16, ninth in the West. Finally, on Thursday night, it was a great game between the 25-10 Milwaukee Bucks and the 5-29 San Antonio Spurs. Victor Wembanyama put on a show on his birthday, scoring a highlight-filled 27-9 with 5 blocks, including an incredible block on Giannis Antetokounmpo in the final seconds of the game. Wemby got help from his teammates too, including 34 from Devin Vassell, but it was Giannis and the Bucks who got the 125-121 win. Giannis put up 44-14-7. His highlights included a clutch three with 2.5 minutes left to give the Bucks a late 3-point lead. For the Spurs, it was a nice showing on national TV. Unfortunately, they are still somehow in the argument for worst team in the league, with their league worst minus 11.4 net rating, an incredible accomplishment in a season featuring the Detroit Pistons. All right, so at this point, I wrote that last sentence I just said with about 3 minutes left in the Denver Golden State game. I had it on in the background, but honestly was mostly ignoring it because the Warriors were up big. I felt safe. I don't need to wait. I'll just talk about the Spurs game. But no, we're talking about both games last night because the Warriors were up 123-105 with 6:51 remaining in the game. ESPN Analytics gave Golden State a 99.6% chance of winning at that point. The final score, 130 Denver, 127 Golden State in regulation. The Nuggets went on a 25-4 run to close the game and capped it all off with Nikola Jokic hitting a banked three from 39 feet as time expired to get the win. The Nuggets are still good. The Warriors are a half game up on the Jazz for the 11th seed. What a week it was, Andrew.
What a week indeed, Al. I'm going to touch on Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors in my segment called Five Stats That Made Me Say, First stat. This is actually like very Thunder heavy, which is the team that we both cover and also the kind of the team of the week, it seems like. Everybody wants to talk about the Thunder this week. So we're going to talk about the Thunder a little bit here too. So the Thunder starters have played 352 minutes together. 352, that's a lot of minutes. SGA, Dort, Giddey, J-Dub, Chet at a plus 6.9, which is pretty nice, some might say. The second most played lineup is if you sub out Josh Giddey and put in sharpshooter Isaiah Joe. Plus 22. That's very good. But it's only in 37 minutes. They have played 309 different lineup combinations this season, the Thunder have, according to NBA.com. And their like second most played lineup is 37 minutes. It's insane. It's insane. And like other teams have played more lineups. Like Dallas has played more lineups. Detroit has played more lineups. But a lot of that's due to injury. And for the Thunder, they've been one of the healthier teams in the NBA. And they're still just trying so many different lineup combinations. And it's really the only like true metric that you have on this team is the starting lineup. And they're pretty good. But there are a lot of like lineups sprinkled in there that are obviously much better than a plus 6.9. But I thought that was interesting because when you compare them to other teams, their profile is like that of a team that's had a ton of injuries and they just haven't had that so far.
And I would say there's a segment of the Thunder fan base who that annoys greatly. I've given up because I'm just used to Daigneault playing so many different lineups.
Yeah.
But you know there are still moments. Apparently, he sat Kenrich Williams in their last game against Atlanta, and he was healthy. Mm-hmm. Some people have brought that up, and we're quite frustrated because Kenrich is such a big part of this team's success. So.
Right.
But it's what the team has done going back since Daigneault's been here. So.
Yeah, and the team would say, the Thunder would say, they see it as an advantage that people just don't know outside of their starters. They don't know quite what they're going to do. So,
right.
And it's worked. It's mostly worked this season. Stat number two that made me say, Steph Curry. He's taken the most clutch field goals in the NBA so far this season at 58. He's shooting 50, 45, 96 in the clutch so far this season. And yet,
wow,
the Warriors are only 13 and 11. So you have Steph, who's taken the most shots, and he's hitting most of his shots, except for last night where he missed two of them and had one of the most egregious turnovers at the end of the game. He was horrible last night in the clutch. But like, if you're the Warriors, like, that made me like really worry, because like, some of it could be like shooting aberration from Curry or whatever. No, he's been amazing, and yet they still can't win these clutch games. I mean,
and that they're getting in so many of those clutch games. I mean, you said 13-11, so that's 24 of their games.
Too many
have been close at the end.
Yeah, yeah, it's too many. It left Curry gnawing on his mouth guard last night in disbelief that Jokic shot. He just sat there, and whoever the cameraman was on TNT who just had the camera just zeroed in on Curry as he just stood there, just like staring off into space, just gnawing on his mouth guard for forever. But shout out to Steph Curry. This Warriors team is kind of a mess. I mean, you could even see the panic in the lineups that they were playing down the stretch, where they're playing like Šarić and Trayce Jackson-Davis and like all these, like, my goodness, like their lineups they were throwing out there at the end of the game were just kind of wild. Like, they just don't know where to go, you know, from night to night, which signals to me that they're probably going to have to make some kind of trade if they want to be like in the postseason mix. Also, this is being signaled by Jonathan Kuminga, who this morning our very own Sham Sharania reported that Kuminga has lost faith in Kerr and just him helping him get better as a player. And it's not good. Kuminga sat the final 18 minutes of the game, and I honestly don't blame Steve Kerr for that. Kuminga wasn't playing very well, especially defensively, but it's just not looking good. Shout out to Josh Huestis, who preseason said the Warriors aren't making the playoffs or the play-in. Like, they're going to be on the outside looking in, which seemed like a really bold take then. And now it's like, wow, like that could actually happen. All right, stat that made me say, number three. The Thunder not only have the best free throw percentage in the NBA at 84.7%, if they finish there or above 83.9%, which is the current record set by the 2021 Clippers, they'll have the best free throw percentage for a team of all time, which I just don't feel like is being talked about at all, like how good like them and the Sixers are in this conversation too at 84.2%. Both those teams would be the best free throw shooting teams of all time, and it's happening this season. And I just don't feel like I really hear that being mentioned anywhere, which is a little
bizarre. Well, I was just looking it up because that Clippers team, they were 28th in the league in free throw attempts.
Oh, interesting.
So they weren't taking a ton of them. No. What's really impressive, I mean, OKC is impressive, but they also are below average in free throw attempts. They're 17th. What's really impressive is the Sixers are number one in the league in free throw attempts and are shooting 84.2%.
Dude, they're making all of them. But yeah, I thought that kind of blew my mind, because I really don't feel like, and I know it's been discussed in like some corners of the NBA, but I don't feel like I've heard it discussed on like a more of a national platform. But 84.7 for the Thunder, 84.2 for the Sixers, both would be like the two best of all time. All right, stat number four that made me say, The Minnesota Timberwolves starting lineup: Mike Conley, Anthony Edwards, McDaniels, Towns, Gobert. One of the best teams in the West. You'd think, man, that'd be great. 278 minutes together, only a plus 2.1, which I was like, that's interesting. If you sub out McDaniels for Nickeil Alexander-Walker, they're a plus 10 and 119 minutes together. And then even if you take out Gobert and put in Troy Brown, where they're playing more of like a 2024 type of offense, it's only in 62 minutes, but they're a plus 29. In eight games together. I just thought that was really interesting. I would have thought, you know, the Wolves starting lineup is one that's played some of the most minutes in the NBA, 278 minutes together. And I just expected to see a better number from that lineup. They they've really struggled, really in particular, to score the basketball with that group. And some of it is that like the true creator of that group is Ant Edwards. Conley can do it a little bit off the bounce, but you know, if you're asking like Towns or McDaniels or Gobert to create, like they can't. And so I just thought that was kind of interesting where, you know, Nickeil Alexander-Walker is not as good of a player as McDaniels, but he's definitely more of like a creator off the bounce. And so I wonder if that has something to do with it. And some of it is like some of these numbers can be a little funny, you know, over time.
Yeah, I wonder because they're not in a slump, but they haven't been as good lately. They're 4-4 in their last eight.
Yeah.
So I wonder if where that number was prior to the Sixers game on the 20th when this kind of mini slump started.
Yeah. But just something to watch for with that Wolves team is like that is not exactly the profile of a team that would be number one in the Western Conference, you know, with a plus 2.1 only. So something to watch for. All right, my last stat that made me say, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not only an MVP candidate, scoring over 30 points per game with his shifty offensive plays, but he's also a hustle stat king. First off, he leads the league in total steals by a mile. He has 80 total steals on the season. Second in the league, Matisse Thybulle at 55. Like, he just has an outrageous amount of steals. He also leads the league in loose balls recovered and deflections this season. And so, all this to say, his defense is part of the reason why the Thunder are one of the best defenses in the league. They currently rank sixth. They were fourth the other day before the Atlanta debacle. Like, they're really good, and they're able to they kind of tether Dort and Chet together, and then it allows Shai to kind of like play like free safety on defense. And he is like thriving in that role. So there's five
stats.
And
it's also going to be a big part of his MVP argument at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Because as good as he has been on offense, and he obviously has been, he's hyper efficient. What he's offering defensively is just such a different player than what we saw 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the reason he's made this huge jump that he's made.
Yeah.
Where everyone is kind of talking about him as a top five player.
Yeah. Yeah. He is fully locked in on both ends, which I think should make him top two, top three in MVP this season. So, all right. Those are the stats that made me say,
All right, Andrew. Everyone knows we're Thunder fans. Andrew just gave some Thunder stats. And look, we really do try we're not trying to talk about the Thunder that much on this podcast.
It's true.
We don't want to be seen as homers. We want it to be about the league, but sometimes it is unavoidable. And their recent run, which I mentioned earlier, included wins over the other top teams in the top of the Western Conference. It's become a moment for this team. You're hearing every NBA podcast do a segment on the Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big topics of conversation around this team right now is, are the Thunder a true contender? A lot of people answering this question with a resounding yes, and I get it. Statistically, it's difficult to look at this team and not conclude that they are a contender. Per Cleaning the Glass, we are talking about the fifth-ranked offense, sixth-ranked defense, third-best point differential. Half-court offense is number one in the league. Half-court defense is fourth in the league. They are the number one three-point shooting team in the league, number two mid-range team in the league. Every stat you find about this team is screaming at you that they are a contender, which frankly makes me very uncomfortable, Andrew. I don't handle success well. I'm bad at enjoying things. I was watching Poku play 30 minutes a night, what seemed like a few months ago.
I know.
And now we're a contender? I don't know if I'm there yet because of what the Thunder as a contender represent. Because not only are they young, not only are they inexperienced, but we're talking about a team being a quote-unquote contender in their first playoffs.
Yeah.
Even in the face of all these amazing stats, it feels inconceivable that this team could really be a contender. Now, to put that youth and inexperience into context, Hispanios NBA, the number one site for looking up this stat, lists the Thunder's average age as 23.7, which is only older than the Spurs and Pistons, who currently have a combined 8 wins. For the playoff experience, here's a quick trivia question for our listeners, because I know you know the answer to this, Andrew. Who has the most career playoff games on the Thunder? I'll give you a few seconds to think of a name. The answer is Davis Bertans with 45 career playoff games. Davis is currently averaging 7.5 minutes per game in OKC. His role on the Thunder is sometimes coming in and shooting three threes as fast as he can and then immediately going back and sitting on the bench.
Yeah,
that is his current role. All of OKC's playoff experience and wisdom is largely tied up in that man. But okay, I say that the Thunder as a contender would be a historical anomaly, but is that actually true? Have there been any teams like OKC in the past that I could look to as an example, a proof of concept that a team this young, this inexperienced, could actually be deserving of the contender label in their first playoffs? And so that's what I went looking for. I went back to the 1983-84 season, which I picked because it was the first season the playoffs expanded to 8 teams in each conference.
Right.
I started by looking for any team that had home court in the playoffs after having not been in the playoffs for at least the previous 2 seasons. Hmm. So in other words, a team that was in the lottery for multiple years and then exploded onto the scene in their first playoff season. The one exception to this that I made was the 89-90 Spurs. Okay, they did make the playoffs in the 87-88 season, which was only 2 seasons prior. But they did it with a 31-51 record.
Wow.
Do you remember when they announced the play-in? You heard some people saying it was rewarding bad teams and that it was crazy to have 10 of 16 teams in a conference make the postseason. Back in the 80s, 8 teams made the playoffs when there were only 11 and 12 teams in each conference. Only 7 of the 23 teams in the league missed the playoffs. And they call us the participation trophy generation. Anyway, this got me down to 26 teams. As an example, last year's Kings team qualifies as one of these teams. Last year's Cavs team also qualifies. Both had home court in the playoffs after having missed the playoffs for at least the 2 previous seasons. Then I looked at the average age of these 26 teams. I decided to calculate the average age of the top 8 players in minutes played for each team, focusing on the main guys who are contributing. I also looked at each team's offensive and defensive efficiency numbers and whether they had an MVP candidate that season, since SGA being one seems like an important aspect of OKC's contender argument. Having that top-tier level of player makes it easier to say they're a contender. And I defined MVP candidate as someone finishing in the top 5 of MVP voting.
Yeah.
And with that, I started to whittle the list down. Okay, first of all, 3 of the 26 teams actually won the title, and none of them have anything in common with OKC. It was the Bubble Lakers, the oldest team on this list. Mm-hmm. The 2022 Warriors, another old team who really shouldn't have made this list, but did somehow miss the playoffs 2 seasons in a row. And the 2008 Celtics, another old team with experienced vets. Mm-hmm. The only older team that I thought shared some similarities with this OKC team was the 08 Hornets. Chris Paul was 22, his 3rd season in the league.
Yeah.
He finished 2nd in MVP voting.
Yeah.
Tyson Chandler was 25. David West was 27. They won 56 games. And similar to OKC, great 3-point shooting team, not an amazing rebounding team, didn't turn the ball over, and top 10 in both offense and defense. They ended up losing in the 2nd round in that 7-game series to the Spurs, a great series. Average age was 28.6, though, so not a perfect match. The teams that made the finals without winning at all were all older as well, with an average age of at least 26.5. That was the 2002 Nets, the 2015 Cavs, which was LeBron's first return season, and the 2021 Suns. Now, the 21 Suns are an interesting comp for OKC. Obviously, mm-hmm. Chris Paul's age brings up the average, but the core outside of him was Booker, who was 4th in MVP voting that year, Bridges and Cam Johnson, who were all 24, and Ayton, who was 22. And similar to the 08 Hornets and probably every Chris Paul team and this year's Thunder, another good 3-point shooting team that was below average in rebounding, didn't turn the ball over, and were top 10 in offense and defense. Lost in the finals to the Bucks. Had a ton more playoff experience simply because of CP3, but otherwise not a bad comp. Mm-hmm. Looking at some of the younger teams on this list, there's some fun ones. Now, the Thunder of all these teams are still the youngest team on this list. But the 2nd youngest team with an average age of 23.9 was the 05 Bulls. The first Bulls team to make it to the playoffs post-Jordan, won 47 games and lost in the 1st round as the 4 seed. Another really fun team that I personally loved was the 09 Blazers, who won 54 games, had an average age of 24, had guys like Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge, Nick Batum, Greg Oden, Rudy Fernandez, Travis Outlaw, Martell Webster, 25-year-old Channing Frye. Can you remember when Channing Frye was 25? Just an overwhelming number of young players who you could get excited about. I distinctly remember talking myself into Travis Outlaw right around this time. Did you know his nickname is Mr. Fourth Quarter? Did you know that?
I remember that. Hearing that, but that seems improbable that that would be his actual nickname.
That Blazers roster was not too dissimilar to the Thunder's current roster makeup, with young guys up and down the nightly rotation.
Yeah.
So if you're looking purely at roster construction, I think the 09 Blazers are the best comp on this list. It's easy to forget now, but that team was loaded with young talent. Mm-hmm. Brandon Roy was an all-star. Aldridge was a soon-to-be all-star. Oden played 61 games that season. That was his second season.
Number one pick, yeah.
Now, we all know what happened, how injuries kind of derailed everything, but that roster was stacked with 24 and under talent. Mm-hmm. And winning 54 games in their first trip to the playoffs is still a massive achievement. They lost in the first round to the Rockets in six. So good comp, but not if you want to believe in OKC as a contender. Mm-hmm. Another team I'll mention, which I think is a decent comp, though again, not necessarily as a true contender, the 2019 Nuggets. Average age of 25.3. Not too old. Jokic was fourth in MVP voting that season. Their playoff rotation featured big minutes from Jokic, 21-year-old Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, Monty Morris, all who were 24 under. Now, they did have 33-year-old Paul Millsap. He did bring their average up, but pretty young otherwise. Top 10 in offense and defense. They end up losing in the second round to Portland in seven. That was the year that Portland went to the conference finals. The final team I'll mention, and arguably the best comp if you really want to believe in this Thunder team, is a team not on the list because it was a team from the 1970s. The 1977 Portland Trailblazers. Average age, 24.8. Which is incredibly low for any team, but especially a team in the 70s when guys were coming into the league much older.
Yeah.
Their top four in minutes played were all 24 under, led by All-Stars Maurice Lucas and Bill Walton, who was second in MVP voting that season. In their first playoff appearance, not their first playoff appearance in a couple of years, literally the franchise's first playoff appearance, the Blazers won the title, beating the Sixers in six games. Now, you can't really compare the two teams stylistically. They didn't have a three-point line. Mm-hmm. Although, I will say that 77 Blazers team is often talked about as, you know, an example of unselfish basketball.
Sure.
Which you hear that a lot about the Thunder as well. But age-wise, the 77 Blazers are the best argument for a first-time playoff team being a true contender. So, if you're buying into the Thunder as a contender, I think the 21 Suns and the 77 Blazers are the teams you want to hold on to, the teams that should give you some hope. No team is going to be a perfect comp, but in terms of having a young MVP candidate with a young surrounding core that was good on both ends, those are the two teams that stand out. So while OKC actually winning would still definitely be a once-in-a-league event because, again, they're the youngest team of all the ones I mentioned, maybe it's not quite as far-fetched as I had once assumed, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Except for, like, you have to go back, like, 50 years.
You do have to go back 50 years.
It's not that crazy, okay?
When they didn't have a three-point line. There were just a couple teams in the league. Whatever.
Oh.
Isn't that that is amazing, though, about the Blazers? That having an average age, just having an average age of 24.8 in the 70s and then winning the championship.
That'd be almost impossible.
With that young of a roster.
I mean, that it must have been impossible to have that many young guys on a team.
And if you're interested in that team, go read Breaks of the Game, an amazing book. There was about, I think, the third season after that season when things started falling apart. They were barely making the playoffs at that point, largely due to injuries to Bill Walton. But there was a ton of stuff going on with that team. It's an incredible book if you haven't read it. A classic in the genre.
Well, we're going to talk about another really fun team with Deuce and Mo. We're talking about the Sacramento Kings right after this break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, Andrew, it is time for the Wheel of Fandom, our weekly segment where we spin a wheel. It lands on a team and we become fans of that team for the next week. 2 weeks ago, the wheel landed on the Sacramento Kings. Now, it was an up and down 2 weeks for the Kings, who went 4-3 over that span, with wins over Phoenix, Atlanta, Memphis, and Orlando in a double overtime thriller, while the three losses included an understandable one to Minnesota and two absolute stinkers, a blowout loss to Portland and a loss at home to the Hornets, who came into the game on an 11-game losing streak. The Kings are now 20-13, fifth in the West, per Cleaning Glass. The Kings have the 13th ranked offense and 21st ranked defense. Andrew, if the Kings are our favorite team, who are our guests?
When we were talking about this, I said there's only one group, one duo that I would like to have for the Kings, Deuce Mason and Morgan Reagan from the Deuce and Mo podcast. I've just been singing yes. Deuce and Mo all morning.
Yes.
Just so excited.
Oh, appreciate you guys for having us again.
Thanks for being on again, guys. They're in the studio, so you got to go check out YouTube just to see them in the studio here on their tiny little screen with us on our screens. It's great. It's great. So through 33 games last season, the Kings were 18-15. This season, the Kings are 20-13 through 33 games. Last year was such a special season for Kings fans. How different has the experience been of year two? Like compare it to last year with the increasing expectations coming off last year's run.
That's it. I mean, it's so different. And I knew it was going to be different. There's nothing like the come up, right? Yeah. Especially when you've had 16 years of missing the playoffs. I mean, last year it was like, the Kings are at 500. Can you believe it? You know, like we're all getting super excited just about being average.
Yeah.
And so now there's increased expectations. You know, it's like, hey, can they be better defensively? What's that number one ranked offense going to look like this year? And this year started with De'Aaron being banged up a little bit. Keegan coming off a really slow start. Kevin Huerter, who's really been a non-factor this year. So it's been kind of bizarre. But then you're like, well, they're ahead of schedule a little bit compared to last year.
It feels like, obviously, record-wise, that they're ahead of schedule. But I think what's also been disappointing in some of their losses, they look bad. And then in some of their wins, it's powerful. It's like, this is the team that needs to just show some consistency going forward. And that's why even at the end of 2023, it was like, all right, that win against the Grizzlies, just a complete win on New Year's Eve. And then 2 days later, a terrible loss against the Hornets to start off 2024.
So you mentioned the offense, and last year it was number one in the league. And at that time, the most efficient offense we'd ever seen. This season, the offense has dropped off some, despite De'Aaron Fox suddenly becoming an incredible high-volume shooter. The offense is currently down to 13th in the league, what do you think are some of the primary reasons for the comparatively slow start for the Kings offense? I know you mentioned the early injuries, but I was looking even over like 10 games, their offense has still been ranked 13th. So it seems like even as people have been getting healthy, the offense has still been a little slow compared to last season.
It's definitely been up and down. And what's wild is last year's number one ranked offense in league history would actually rank eighth this year in the NBA.
Yeah.
And that's what's wild about what offenses are doing right now throughout the league. I mean, I think the biggest thing is you look at two of the Kings' most productive three-point shooters last year, Keegan Murray and, of course, Kevin Huerter. Those guys made over 200 threes, over 40% clip. Kevin Huerter is, you know, he's not even starting right now. They're starting Chris Duarte ahead. So it feels like they're trying to figure out what's going on with the shooting guard spot. It seems like Keegan Murray's starting to come out of this funk a little bit. He's showing more flashes of being consistent, but he's still a young guy. I think that's hurt them a lot. And I feel like they've gone away from some of the stuff that made them successful last year. They were a heavy dribble handoff team. They're not playing as fast. Part of this seems like it's deliberate. Like they want to make sure that they're doing other things. So come playoff time, when teams are trying to take away the dribble handoffs and some of the things that they're so comfortable with, that they can handle that better come playoff time. But yeah, it's just been clunky.
I mean, Deuce pretty much just said it all there, right? Yeah, thanks for taking every single answer there, because that is what it was. I mean, you look at the DHOs, and now they're setting up a lot in that horn set where the two high screens come up and you have De'Aaron Fox, you know, just trying to go downhill on it and everything. It's great. And it's worked against certain matchups, bringing some bigs out. It's been great. But it's like the dribble handoff, like what that was doing for not only the shooters, and you look at the way that they were coming off that, creating that space from their defender, but then allowing guys like even Malik Monk curling off of Sabonis's shoulder and being able to be this elite playmaker, which he still is. But I just felt like it was creating so much more with their offense that I go, I get why you're going away from it, because you want to be more than that. But also, like, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
I also think they're still running it, but it's less efficient. Right? When Kevin Huerter is not being as impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Someone who is impactful, Malik Monk, he's talked about as this classic sixth man, like microwave score kind of guy off the bench, but he's quietly been putting up career numbers this season, not just in scoring, but in playmaking too. He's averaging 5 assists per game. And we got to see arguably his best game of the season in the double OT win against the Magic, where he put up 37-9 along with 7 threes in 46 minutes. That's more minutes than Monk had played in the previous two games combined. Do you think Malik Monk deserves a more consistent role with this team? I mean, I think I already know the answer to this question from listening to you guys, but just talk about Malik Monk for us.
So really quick too, we make a joke all season long because you could look at his minutes in every single game, and he's playing off the bench 28 minutes, 29 minutes, 28 and a half minutes. It was never 30 minutes. And we're like, is a bomb going to go off? Like, what's going to happen if Malik Monk plays over 30 minutes? We were just making jokes. And finally, you're starting to see, okay, there is an issue. He needs to play more minutes. Good things happen when he plays more minutes. I don't need him in that starting role, but I need him not only finishing the game, I need him contributing throughout the game a little bit more. And I think Mike Brown is kind of turning a corner in realizing that as well, because he is a special player. I know he's a score first kind of guy, but he can make such a quick decision that as soon as he gets in the paint and even leaves his feet, he's capable of making some crazy beautiful play.
Yeah, I think he is one of the most impactful bench players in the league. I mean, the guy's confidence. I say he's first team all confidence, because you can't shake this guy. He looks to get buckets for sure, but he loves setting his teammates up. I mean, the pick and roll game he's got with Sabonis, he loves throwing lobs. He just loves attacking. So it's not like he's just coming in and chucking up shots. He brings life to the Kings a lot of nights, especially with the bench units that's been up and down, that roles have shifted. He's been the one steady thing with Sacramento. And I think, he's got to play more, especially considering Huerter has not been effective. Chris Duarte hasn't really been effective. Yeah. Monk needs more minutes for sure.
So one of the other bigger developments this season for the Kings has been the defensive improvement of Keegan Murray, who's in his second season. As one statistical indication of this improvement, Dunks and Threes currently has Keegan 23rd in defensive EPM, easily the highest for any Kings player. Watching him every night, what are some of the specific improvements on defense you've noticed compared to how he played in his rookie season?
Well, one, he's just moving better. Like last year, mm-hmm. he was getting hunted a lot, as most rookies do. And he spent the offseason working out with De'Aaron Fox in Sacramento the entire time. Like they're playing one-on-one all the time. And, you know, I didn't think much of it at the time. Well, they're just both in Sacramento hanging out. But I think that just going up against De'Aaron Fox one-on-one is going to help your game. Like you're going to be able to take on some different types of matchups, and you've seen his versatility. He's able to defend multiple positions now. He's playing more physical without fouling, and he's got good size. You know, he's 6'8", 6'9", and long, and I think he's done a much better job. He's also a high IQ guy. He understands defense, yes. and you're just seeing his growth, where last year he's being hunted. This year, Brown's putting him on Steph Curry during a game, right? Yeah. Like he's taking on some more challenging matchups.
Yeah, he's going up against some of the best players out there. And I think also, you know, he's always had his length, but his second year in the league, he knows how to utilize his length better. He knows he has more control of his arms, his body, and everything out there. And so he understands the importance of not only being able to quickly move your feet, but also contesting a shot. And you're seeing that he's able to contest shots against some of these guys that are usually capable of elevating in the mid range or elevating at the rim. And I think he's also being a lot more physical. Yep. I know we've talked about him on the offensive end, but he's been able to be more physical getting to the rim, but he's also been able to be more physical with guys without fouling.
We're almost a month away from the NBA trade deadline. How important do you think it is for the Kings to be active this trade deadline? And what are some of the biggest needs for the team that fans have identified as like, or maybe some obvious targets that like the fan base has identified?
Yeah, I think being active is really important for this team because they have the same weaknesses that they did last year, right? I think teams look to target Kevin Huerter a lot of nights, especially when he's in the starting lineup. They go at Harrison Barnes. Those are probably some issues right there just from a defensive standpoint that limits the Kings from reaching their highest of ceilings, right? I think that has to get better, those positions, especially defensively, having more athleticism, a little more versatility. It's what everyone wants, right? It's like, right. We want a whole bunch of guys that can hit threes and play defense. Like, it's hard to achieve, right? But those are some upgrades that I think people look at like, okay, can you upgrade those spots? I think a lot of fans are looking around and they would love someone like Markkanen, but it's just like, you're not going to get him. Mm-hmm. And that's the challenge that Monty McNair faces. How do you raise the ceiling of this group when you don't want to trade Keegan Murray?
Yep. Yep.
And
that's it. I mean, that's
part
it.
Of it is, you know, you can make some moves on, you know, with some of the guys we've talked about, but part of it too is like, can Keegan keep developing? Can he turn into a legit two-way stud?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's do not lose Keegan Murray in any of this. And I don't think that's their goal, you guys. So yeah. I think in some ways, like, he's off the table. De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis off the table, and I wish Malik Monk was off the table. I just don't know where this front office is willing to go. But at the same time, yeah, I told Deuce, I go, what about some of the under the radar type guys, or just go to the Chicago Bulls and pick whoever you want, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The other names that, you know, Siakam's gotten brought up a lot, OG before he got moved, and mm-hmm. it's just like, I think these teams are going, if they're picking up the phone talking to Sacramento for names like that, they're starting with Keegan Murray. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's off the table. So how are you going to upgrade this roster by keeping someone like Keegan Murray? And I think they should keep him.
Off the top of your head, do you know how many? They have one outgoing first, right, from the Huerter trade?
Yeah, the Hawks one, which is weird how it's going to be conveyed. Like, it could be conveyed this year if they miss the playoffs. So that's kind of, you know, that's the one that's kind of hanging around. But they could do some pick swaps, and they have some desirable contracts. It's not like they have a whole bunch of bad contracts. So I think there are moves that Monty McNair can make. And part of it, too, I know you've talked about this with OKC before, is like, I know it's not fun to be a little patient.
Yeah.
And there's a window for sure when you've got Fox and Sabonis. At the same time, like I kind of want to see what Keegan looks like. I don't want to mm-hmm. feel like they have to go all in. Like it's mm-hmm. okay to make the playoffs again this year and maybe get bounced out in the first, yes. second round.
Yeah.
It's how do you grow from here? And part of it is just growing together and making some subtle tweaks around the edges.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, just if Kevin Herter just started, if he just broke out of this slump, like that would be like trading for a really good player, someone who really helped this team last year. I was listening to one of your night chats, and you're talking about Duncan Robinson, who similarly last year, like he was out of the rotation for the Heat for a lot of last season. And then he gets to the playoffs and it's like, oh, there's Duncan Robinson. There's the guy we paid all the money. And now he's having a great season. And so you kind of just hope that like something similar can happen with Herter. And this isn't just like what he's going to be going forward.
Track record. I mean, that's what that's what we keep trying to say with Kevin Herter. And I think we remember his ups and downs throughout his time, even with the Hawks. And for so many people, they want to see success and results now. And I understand that sports culture, but if you're at the top and you're running this team, you got to make sure that you're still finding a way to understand the importance of some of these other pieces in their roles. And sometimes it's just their personalities and how they need to be communicated with differently to get the most out of them. I think Kevin Herter is just a confidence guy that has lost a lot of his confidence. And not only is he going to find it when he starts making shots, feeling his rhythm, but I think it's not that he needs to be babied. He just needs to be communicated with differently.
I mean, this guy is like 25 years old. He has a track record of being a really good 3-point shooter. We've seen his playmaking ability. You can't tell me that all of a sudden he's just done as a basketball player and he's been super ineffective. So it's, you know, it's on him to try to get out of this, but like Morton said, the coaching staff too. And I think that's the one thing you talk about the change with this team this year. I think Mike Brown's been a little more rigid this year. I mean, I think the leash has gone shorter when it comes to mistakes outside of Fox and Sabonis. Like if you are out there and you're not doing, if you make a defensive mistake, sometimes you're getting yanked and you're sitting for a while. Malik Monk, the game before, he just had this 37 point outing. Mike Brown played him 5 minutes in the first half and then came out the other night and said that was a mistake. So I think Brown has this, like, he has these amazing goals that he wants this team to reach. But I think there has to be some, you can't treat every game like it's a playoff game in the regular season. You have to help these guys and put them in a position to succeed.
Well, thank you for answering all of our questions about the Kings, but it is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly trivia game show where Andrew goes head to head against a beat writer, or in this case, two, because the challenger this week is Deuce and Mo.
It's like
Deuce
one
and Mo podcast.
That's so mean. That is so. She's what bad a with terrible trivia. Teammate. She's bad with I'm bad at trivia, but like you could at least pretend. Like, hi, I'm Kevin Herter. Talk to me differently, dude. Like, I need some confidence in this. I'm ready.
Wow. Wow, already some strife in the Deuce and Mo team.
This is great. This is working out great for me already.
This is great for Andrew. Okay, so how this works, I've come up with 8 questions about the Kings. You'll give me a number between 1 and 8. Some are easy, some are hard. If you get it right, you'll get at least 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1, and we'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. So to start us off, Deuce and Mo, and obviously you two have to agree on all your answers. Okay.
We'll try.
Got to be consensus the whole time.
What's a number between 1 and 8 that you like?
Go ahead.
Thanks. I'll get this one right. 3.
3. Okay.
Question number 3. The Kings currently have 3 players, Sabonis, Fox, and Monk, averaging at least 5 assists per game. There is only one other team in the NBA who has 3 different players averaging at least 5 assists per game. Ooh. Who is it? And it's not some like, you know, guy who played 2 games and he's averaging 5 assists. All these guys are regular rotation players for this team.
Okay.
I think it's the Clippers. That's just my guess. I'm just going to look at Kawhi, James Harden, and Paul George.
Okay.
Is that?
You know what?
Do you like that
one? Yeah, because this isn't trip. This
that
is,
was the first
this
one.
This is like a... Yeah, yeah.
We have to move fast, too.
Go.
Clippers.
Great guess. Honestly, made me go and look it up to make sure it wasn't right. But it is not right, unfortunately. I was thinking, because you didn't even mention it, but Russell Westbrook, you know?
Yeah.
How are they not?
Right.
Yeah.
But they are not, unfortunately.
Was I close?
Yeah, he said. That's why he looked it up.
Let's see. James Harden's at 8.1, Westbrook's at 4.6, and then George and Kawhi are 3.9 and 3.6.
So no, the answer is no, you're not.
So no.
So no.
Man.
Andrew, any guesses?
God, this is tough. Is it Denver? I don't know.
The Nuggets, it is not. Would you believe it is the Los Angeles Lakers?
Is it? Oh,
LeBron, D'Lo, and Austin Reeves are all averaging at least 5 assists per game.
Oh, that is wild.
That's okay. A great question.
Okay, that's probably the hardest one.
Shout out to D'Lo.
That makes you feel any better. Andrew, the board is yours.
Number one.
Question number one. Which of the following nicknames is not a basketball reference official nickname for JaVale McGee? So this is specific JaVale McGee. Okay. So I'm going to give you five nicknames.
Okay.
One of them is fake.
Okay.
The other four are real.
Okay.
The nicknames are Pierre, the Big Platypus, the Great Adventure, the Big Secret, Big Daddy Wookie. Once again, that is Pierre, the Big Platypus, the Great Adventure, the Big Secret, or Big Daddy Wookie.
The Big Platypus. I was kind of watching Deuce and Moe during this just to see their reactions. And there was like
Big Daddy Wookie. I don't know.
I didn't study up his basketball reference before this.
There was extra movement on the Big Platypus, so I'm just going to go with that one.
Well, I didn't fool you, Andrew, because the Big Platypus is not a JaVale McGee nickname. However, in 2012, when he played for the Wizards, he fooled everyone by saying he had just purchased two platypuses.
Really?
Or platypi. Apparently, you can say either. And everyone thought it was real. And it turns out he didn't own any platypus. Not even one.
What? Well, it's interesting really quick, too, because his family photo for Christmas this year, he was holding like a snake. There's and had a little Santa hat on it. So like I wouldn't be surprised if that was
He also I don't know if he still has, but like he had a Sphinx cat, like a hairless cat that has an Instagram account. So he's a big animal guy.
Yeah.
Well, he's a vegan, I learned.
Oh.
So it wasn't the worst nickname that I came up with. Okay, Deuce and Moe, board is yours.
Let's go number four.
Question number four. Keegan Murray scored 47 points in a game against the Jazz a few weeks ago. Since 2000, four other Kings have scored 40 points in a game before turning 24 years old. Can you name all four? Now, you do get a half point per correct answer.
Oh, my gosh.
Since what year was that?
2000.
This was since 2000. So there's been four Kings players who have scored 40 before turning 24 years old.
Wow. Okay. DeMarcus Cousins.
Good one.
That is correct for a half point.
It's gonna be someone random.
Kevin Martin.
That is correct for a full point.
Wow.
2000. Okay.
I'm so bad with ages. So yeah. I was about to name off some guys, but they probably were not 24 with the Kings.
Just name one. It's okay. You don't have to.
It doesn't have to be your final answer. You can just throw it out. You can discuss.
Okay, one
that could help Andrew, but.
You know, one I was kind of thinking of was also Marcus Thornton. I'm not submitting that. Okay.
Okay.
All right, I'm not. I don't know how old he was. I feel like he had some big games.
I like
you try to think of those bad teams, you know?
Yeah.
Mike was older when he was here, right?
And Andrew said he liked it, so now I don't like it. Mike was
older.
Mike, he did not score 40. He was probably over 25 by the time he scored.
That's
40
what okay. Because he did score.
Yeah, I think he was over 24. Okay. Man.
I like that one.
Isaiah Thomas.
That is incorrect.
Oh, God. I knew that was a gamble. He played 4 years of college ball.
Wow.
Okay.
Andrew, you have a chance to steal. There is 1 point remaining, two names on the board.
Did Pages do it?
Andrew, that is also incorrect.
Ouch.
Now, the name you all should have gotten for sure, De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox, one of the names.
Oh, my God. It.
Wow.
And the other name, Marcus Thornton.
No. Wow.
That would have been a great one.
Why wouldn't you just go with it? You should have been like, oh, this isn't submitting. You should just submit.
Wow.
Submit. Yeah, Andrew, you even said that one was great. Why didn't you just take it? Because you're a liar.
Because I thought it was wrong. I thought it was great for me.
Oh, Marcus Thornton, man.
There's a moment for him. Years.
He had some fun games.
He did. I liked him a lot. Okay, Andrew, board is yours. 2-1. Andrew is in the lead. Question number two. Domantas Sabonis is currently leading the league in rebounds per game with 12.8. Since 2000, there are only three other Kings who have averaged double-digit rebounds for a season. Name all three. And you have to give me all three to get the 2 points.
Oh.
So no half points here, Andrew. So you have to just throw out three names, and then I'll tell you once you give me them all.
Three double-digit bounders since 2000?
Three double-digit bounders since 2000. Kings players. No age limit on this one.
No age limit. That feels like I don't know. I think Chris Webber did it. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, that is one name.
Since 2000. Boogie.
Okay, that's your second name. You have a third name.
I don't know if this other guy, when you said age limit, it made me think of this one guy, but I don't know if he did it with the Kings. I'm feeling nervous about it.
Good.
I'll say Vlade, but I just don't know that I don't know that he got the bounds. I don't know that Vlade got the bounds.
All right, so Andrew guessed DeMarcus Cousins, Chris Webber, and Vlade Divac. Andrew, that is incorrect. Dusimo, you have a chance to steal for 1 point. Would you like to borrow any of Andrew's names?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and borrow Cousins and Webber.
Okay.
And the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Miller.
That is absolutely correct.
Yes!
All me!
And the game is tied. 2-2. And Brad Andrew Miller, is baby. Frozen.
I thought he was just disappointed for a second.
Yeah. Wow, he's holding that face for a long time.
Oh, no.
Really sad.
Oh, no.
We can still hear you, though.
We can hear you, though. Good.
For the records, I did whisper Brad Miller to Deuce Mason, just letting everyone know I can play this game.
Thank you for putting that into the official record.
Thank you.
Okay, Deuce and Mo, the game is tied 2-2 with 4 questions to go. Which number? In the game against Atlanta on the 29th, De'Aaron Fox hit 8 3-pointers, a career high in Kings franchise history. There are 9 other players who have also hit at least 8 3-pointers in a game, and we're going to name them all. So how this works, Deuce and Mo, you'll give me a name, then Andrew will give me a name, and we'll go back and forth till one of you stumbles. So these are Kings players who have hit at least 8 threes in a game. And I will tell you, this is, I guess it doesn't matter, but this is specific to Sacramento Kings. Did they even have a 3-point line? I don't remember when they moved. Anyways, it's just Sacramento Kings. Okay, so Deuce and Mo. Your first name?
Mike Bibby.
Whew, yes, that is correct. Mike Bibby did do it once. All right, Andrew.
Buddy Hield?
Of course, Buddy Hield did it plenty of times. All right, back to Deuce and Mo.
Man, you think?
Oh.
It gets a little murky.
Well, then do the one that we're positive with.
I'm not positive about this one either.
consensus.
Kevin Herter
has done it.
Yes,
that is correct. Back to Andrew.
What about Bogdan Bogdanovich?
Andrew, that is incorrect.
Seriously?
Which means Deuce and Mo get the points. The other names on the list: Keegan Murray did it.
Okay.
Omri Caspi. Mitch Richmond.
Wow.
Harrison
Mitch.
Barnes. Nemanja Bjelica. Mm-hmm. And once again, Marcus Thornton.
Wow.
I'm glad you got that wrong, because I don't know how many more of those I would have got right. Bjelica. What a question.
I don't know if it's going to land on very many of those. Wow.
Okay, Andrew, you're now down by 2. 3 questions to go.
All right, 5.
Question number 5. There are 12 two-man lineups that have played at least 400 minutes together this season for the Kings. Only one of those 12 lineups has a negative net rating. Oh. Who are the two players in that lineup? And you get 1 point per correct answer.
Wow. Kevin Herter? Do I have to say them both?
Andrew, that is incorrect.
Oh, okay, great.
Doesn't matter because you got the first one wrong.
Cool.
Okay, Deuce and Mo, you have a chance to steal.
Davion Mitchell.
Also incorrect. Would you believe that the only negative two-man lineup that's played at least 400 minutes together, Domantas Sabonis and Malik Monk? Never would I got.
Yeah, this is typical the Athletic agenda against Sabonis.
I like
it's
it.
Disgusting. Right. We're leading. I don't appreciate that.
Got that right.
unfortunately, you have a lead right now, and you really want to bank this win.
Okay,
we're staying.
By the way,
you got to stay for at least a couple more questions.
You play with five. Who do we care about? Two. You know why do we care?
Shut up. All right. Is it our choice?
Yes. It is your choice.
Mm-hmm. We'll take seven.
Seven.
According to Cleaning the Glass, there is only one Sacramento King who is in the 70th percentile or higher for two-point percentage, three-point percentage, and free throw percentage. Who is it?
Free throw percentage? This whole team can't shoot free throws. Let's see.
To me, it's...
That's so mean. I didn't mean to say that.
Free throw percentage.
My first reaction could be Keegan. The 3-point one is the one that's I'm questioning right now. I was just looking at his mid-range numbers yesterday.
How's his free throws? Because you
pretty good free throw shooter, I think. Solid.
I know. I know.
Malik Monk's a really good free throw shooter.
What about Harrison? He's pretty efficient.
Okay. Go with it.
We're going to go HB.
Wow.
Going Harrison Barnes. And to be clear, that was Mo's choice.
I agreed, though. I endorsed it.
No,
and that is correct.
Yes! Yes,
for 2 points.
He's efficient. He's frustrating, but he's efficient.
It's frustrating, but he's efficient. Great guess. You guys have basically you've won the week. Now we still have one question left. It doesn't really matter, but it's a really fun one. So,
okay, good.
Andrew, here's the question. Mm-hmm. Domantas Sabonis has played 297 games in his career where he logged at least 30 minutes. In those games, how many times did Sabonis fail to record at least 5 rebounds? Now, you get to choose who answers first. You can make Deuce and Mo answer first, and then you go higher or lower, or you can answer first, and they will go higher or lower. So 297 games in his career where he's played at least 30 minutes. How many of those games did he fail to record at least 5 rebounds?
7.
Andrew sets the bar at 7? Deuce and Mo.
That's funny. I literally wrote down 7 with a square around it on my paper.
Why don't we up him? Or like lower and go 6. 6 or 8?
6.
Nice.
The correct answer is 3, which means Deuce and Mo got another point. Finished the week 7-2. Win on Andrew versus the Beat. Congratulations.
Wow. Can
I just say this real fast?
What do you?
The first time we played this, we got dominated, and mainly because we were up until like 4 o'clock in the morning in downtown San Francisco.
Wow. Excuses.
So it was nice to be refreshed and ready to go, and you know, absolutely show what we're capable of.
Wow. Sounds like we have a rubber match coming up sometime in the
future. Yes.
You got that right.
Three.
You got that right. At least I got the weird JaVale McGee question. That was.
That's true.
That's very weird. That's just a pure guess. Hey, you should go listen to the Deuce and Mo podcast. You can watch it on YouTube. You can download it wherever you get your podcasts. It's a great show. Maybe you're not a Kings fan. Maybe you're listening to this and you're like, I'm a Hornets fan or I'm a Magic fan. Like, it doesn't matter. It's a great NBA show. You should go listen to it today. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Appreciate you guys so much.
You're the best. Thank you.
All right, Andrew, that was Kings 2 weeks. 2 weeks of Kings. We're going to spin the wheel. Let's see how many teams we got left. 22 teams. Mm. A lot of names on the board. Mm-hmm. There's only a couple teams I wouldn't want to watch. Most I'd be excited to watch. So let's see who we get this week on the Wheel of Fandom. Our team next week will be the, Indiana Pacers.
Ooh, the Pacers.
Playing well right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to go take a look and see who they're facing this upcoming week. Yeah, they've won 5 in a row.
Yeah.
They've got games against Atlanta and then Saturday against Boston at home. Monday against Boston at home. 2 games against Boston.
Wow.
And then the Wizards on Wednesday.
Yeah. Against Atlanta, there's a chance that they both that we reach the over 300 points scored in that game.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. It's a rematch of that game.
So hoping to see that happen. Hey, something else that I'm hoping to see is you guys leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you do that, we'll read it on the show. Just like this one from my guy, Brighton Schmidt. He says, love the Slam and Jam. Best NBA content out there. And he wishes us a Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for that review, Brighton. And again, leave us review. We'll read it on the show. Hope you guys enjoy your weekend and the basketball. And we will talk to you guys again next week.